Coming up on the Assassins podcast, we've got CEO and co-founder of Film Hub, Alan Descragnoli, jumping on the show to talk about how Film Hub has approached business development, enterprise sales, to secure some of the biggest and baddest distribution deals with incredible partners like Amazon Prime Video, Tubi, and the Roku channel. Alan joins to talk about the importance of focusing on partners that maybe have higher growth potential versus those that are only the market share leaders. We talk about the future of the film industry, both film and entertainment, the importance of democratizing film production. And then we spitball a couple of ideas for TV series that could be huge, probably would fail miserably. All right, without further ado, Assassins, let's get into the show. Giddy up. See them dollar signs. Hustle. Grind. Assassin state of mind. Hustle. Grind. See them dollar signs. Assassin state of mind. Assassin state of mind. Hustle. Grind. See them dollar signs way above the bottom line. Assassin state of mind. Hustle. Grind. See them dollar signs. Assassin state of mind. Assassin state of mind. Hustle. Grind. See them dollar signs way above the bottom line. Assassin state of mind. They say money over everything. What is going on, everybody? Happy Friday. It's your host, Justin Vandehey, here at the Assassins Podcast, where every week we have founders on the show talking about their journeys going from zero to one. This week on the Assassins Podcast, we've got a good friend of mine, serial entrepreneur. He's a startup operator at companies like SugarSync, Omniata, and Square. He's also the general manager at Tandem Capital for a while. I'm thinking, what the hell, man? We used to run around the marina together in our early 20s, just causing trouble. Now we grew up. I don't know what happened. Alan Descragnoli, CEO and co-founder of Film Hub. Welcome to the Assassins Podcast.
Thanks, Justin. Great to be here.
All right, man. So I basically laid out your entire background. I'd love maybe just to start with, if you wanted to talk a little bit more about Film Hub, like what led you to start the company? What is Film Hub? And then we can kind of jump into it from there.
Yeah, totally. So it's interesting. I went to Wharton. I was a Penn guy and went straight into building tech companies rather than going to finance. And I've always just like loved building and loved operating, but hilariously actually had a background in theater production back in college. And so always had an interest in the arts. And I was figuring out what I wanted to do next. I just recently finished up a time at the Cash App at Square and was figuring out what I wanted to do next. And I met my co-founder, Klaus, who was a world-renowned composer, wrote a bunch of music to Pirates and Gladiator, over 100 titles to his name, Thin Red Line, Mission Impossible 2, like some awesome soundtracks you've heard. And Klaus came from the music area of film and saw kind of in the music industry, we were automating and beginning to get faster and faster in technology with distributing music. And he's like, well, why isn't this happening in film? And he'd put together a basic team of a couple of folks kind of as a side project out of his music business, trying to automate and make distribution scale faster. And I saw what he was doing. We hit it off immediately. And this was late 2019. And January 2020, Klaus and I went full time on building Film Hub to help automate the film distribution process and build really the distribution company of the future for film.
Earlier this year, I know y'all raised a $6.8 million seed round from A16Z. That's massive. Andrew Chen, he's the network effects guru on your board. So major congratulations on that. That's a huge accomplishment. I guess, yeah, related to just creating network effects and the business model, I'd love maybe if you could just talk a little bit more about what Film Hub's business model looks like, a little bit more about like who is your customer and how does the model actually work?
Yeah, totally. So it's interesting. So we started this off focused solely on filmmakers and producers, right? That was our first bread and butter. And it works as filmmakers. We work as a standard distributor for them. We take their content on, then we distribute through to major streaming platforms, pay TV operators, everything throughout the world in a very clean, transparent way where first dollar in that we make on their film, 80 cents goes to them, 20 cents to us. It's a pretty big change in the current industry where in more standard distribution deals that are done in kind of the old school methodology, it's a lot of expenses, deductions, percentages are higher. And we said, how do we automate this process, make it faster and better for the filmmaker so that they can make more money? And that's ultimately kind of what we're focused on. Hilariously, as you start doing that, from a customer perspective, then distributors and sales agents now have seen the benefit of what we built from a technology perspective, and they're using FilmHub to expand their distribution as well. So we act and distribute content on behalf of distributors and sales agents now as well within our business model.
I read Andrew Chen's book a while back. What would you classify as the hard side of FilmHub's network?
Yeah, the hard side, is breaking down the barriers with the streaming channels, right? And getting them to license content from us. Because guess what? This is an industry that is entrenched. It has existed, but distribution companies have existed for sometimes 10, 15, 20 years, and we're the new guy on the block, right? And so it's up to us to prove to these streaming channels that, hey, this, we are sourcing top tier content for them. That's what they want to see. They want to see that there's top tier content that will perform, that is relevant to audiences today. And especially when they have trust in these organizations that they've worked with for so many years, we have to establish that trust. It takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. Some streaming channels have taken us 1 to 2 years to get a deal closed. Like, that's just the nature of the game. But now as more and more of the streaming channels are getting closed, guess what? It gets easier and easier to close the next. And then guess what? You also then end up, because of the fact you've got the bigger streaming channels, the filmmakers want to work with you. But the key is, for us as a distribution company, we always want to be, very inclusive of the entire filmmaking community, right? I think most distributors, as they start going up market in terms of films, in terms of quality, in terms of streaming channels, they always forget about the folks that got them there. And that's one of the big differences of FilmHub. We always want to serve the entire market with us.
Yeah, it's a good transition to another point. I was going to call this out, that FilmHub has some incredible content and distribution partners, Amazon Prime Video, Tubi, the Roku channel. To get the ball rolling, what was that process like in the early days when you were just getting traction? I know a lot of founders, they look at like a lot of these BD deals and I don't know if they think they're Hail Marys or what is actually involved in kind of building the business case and how you thought about quantifying value for those partners. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what that sales and partnership process looked like.
Yeah, definitely. So it's interesting. Every streaming channel has a little bit different way of method and operating depending on their business model, right? So some focus on upfront licenses, some focus on revenue share based deals. So you start in our early days, we were delivering titles to Vimeo, right? Just to prove that, hey, there was an audience there, right? We were just delivering titles to Vimeo and like, hey, at least we can get these out and we can show, hey, here's all these titles. And the streaming channels would say, hey, oh, actually, these are really truly world-class titles in some instances. We'd show them the revenues we were generating. And guess what? That helps get those deals going. One of the interesting things is, like a startup company, you think about the partners you're willing to take on in a different way because you know that, hey, maybe these folks will grow out. So for instance, Tubi is one of our largest streaming channels that we work with today. They're doing $1 billion-plus company now, owned by Fox. They're huge and massive. You were with them in their earlier days when they were still called AdRise and they were building out individual apps of content. And we took a chance with them, right? We were one of the original partners. We now account for like over probably 10 to 15% of their library on their platform. And that was just starting in the early days with them. We grew up with them. So guess what? You grew up alongside some of your partners. So I think the key is, you have to be strategic about this, but, don't be when you're an early stage entrepreneur, don't be afraid of doing a deal with a little guy. You don't know which ones will become the big guys.
Yeah, that's really smart. I've talked to a lot of founders that are either doing D2C businesses, they might be selling into big box retail, trying to land massive deals with Walmart or Target or Amazon. And there's a lot of these like high growth e-commerce sites, a lot of different parallels like that, where you never know where the big ones are going to pop. And so it's good to sort of diversify your base and see what sticks.
Yeah. And you also never know, especially in the film industry, people change companies often. Right. Yeah. And so a person you worked with at a small company, all of a sudden is at a big company, like, oh, I want to bring XYZ over. That happens a lot. And so it comes down to your reputation is everything within this. And so don't be afraid of that. I mean, we're seeing already, we've had a number of our partners at previous companies have changed over to other companies, and it's been very beneficial for us.
Yeah, it's good segue talking a little bit more about sort of the future of the entertainment and film industry. Noticed in one of the earlier press releases in this year, you mentioned the team was thinking about potentially building out its own streaming service, which I think is pretty freaking cool. I'd love, just to hear your thoughts on like, where do you see a lot of this going and sort of what's your vision for FilmHub?
Yeah, totally. So FilmHub will always be a distribution company. We will partner with other entities that are associated with us that are building out the consumer pieces. So like we will always be a licensing company. Similar to Fox. Fox is they have a distribution arm that licenses content to Tubi, for instance. That's how we see it. And so that's the one way we see it on that side. But as far as like where the streaming industry is going, ultimately, we see a huge opportunity still in this space. And one of the biggest things that we notice is they're still at the streaming level that's still very hard to get content onto these platforms. And that's one of the biggest things that we see as like a huge barrier and a huge opportunity where, guess what? We fail to acknowledge the fact that YouTube is the largest streaming channel in the world. Like people don't think about that in terms of professional film. YouTube is the biggest. Forget about Netflix. Like Netflix is peanuts in comparison to YouTube. Like that's what you have to realize is like they are really, people are adding more and more professional content to them, and that's where the future is going. And so what is the learning there? Guess what? If you make a platform open, if you get very good about building technological curation and using AI, ML to curate what Justin wants to watch versus what Alan wants to watch, that's the future. And that's what music has done already with Apple Music, with Spotify. When you go into those apps, you have every single thing available you want to listen to. And that's the way the biggest players will be built in this space. You can't build a solely small niche streaming service based upon XYZ and become massive. It's just that doesn't happen. Or even Netflix is like already seeing that they are limited in their capacity based on the fact that they are focused solely on upfront licenses. They are complaining that they have large churn rates. But guess what? They have large churn rates because people want to watch stuff that's not on Netflix and that Netflix won't take on. That's a big mistake. And those are the things that they need to change.
How do they catch? I always think about that. Like, I can't tell how many, I've had so many film ideas. I'm like, man, I just want to get this genius in front of the right GM, the right creative person at Netflix. And it's honestly, it's probably better that my competitive dart throwing comedy has never made it to mainstream. But I still think, there. I could see Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly doing some sort of competitive dart. Or actually, I think the other one that I've been pitching to like my basketball crew is a comedy series on pickup basketball called Picked Up. I still think they
could love that.
Speaking about that, like there are so many different profiles if you play pickup ball. The person with the horrible jumper, the one that wears $1,200 worth of attire that doesn't take the tags off. There's the old man, the 78-year-old person that's just running with knee pads. I feel like that would take off.
Oh, I think you have a different episode every week of the different weirdos that show up. But guess what? Here's the thing, right? Right now, the fact of the matter is like you should just be empowered to go make that, right? And you should be able to like get that out and get that in the world. It shouldn't be up to somebody at Netflix saying yes to you in that perspective. That's what needs to change in this industry, because your creative genius is your creative genius. And it's like up to you to figure that out. We need to empower humans to make that change and make that decision. It shouldn't be somebody at the top saying like, oh, I'm going to greenlight this project. That's ultimately not the way that we need to think about this. Like the tools are almost there. They're still like there to differing levels, right? But like, that's our belief is like, if I can empower, how do I create a platform that allows Justin to make 20 of these films. But guess what? 18 of them are going to suck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 19. Yeah. There's going to be,
but there's probably going to be the one that's actually going to hit and do well. And like, that's what we need to say is like, it's all about shots on goal, right? It's the same thing as venture, right? Film is the same thing as venture. Like I tell a filmmaker every day, forget making your one film for $1 million. Figure out how to make 10 for 100,000. That's what I want to hear. Because guess what? Like you have a much higher chance of success with that. And it's the same thing with film. And Netflix is realizing this. They're like, they realize that they need the portfolio play to do that. And that's how they think about it.
I know we're coming to the end of our time here. Last question. Reflecting back, I was creeping on your LinkedIn profile because I knew you up until you started it into it. But I didn't realize you were running game on a company at the time, Purring Pumas. So you were a founder of a company called Purring Pumas. And now, you know, you've got a venture-backed company. I've been asking this question of serial entrepreneurs. We call them serial assassins, people that have started multiple businesses. What would Alan, the CEO and founder of FilmHub, tell Alan, the CEO and founder of Purring Pumas? If there was anything that you could bestow upon that first-time founder that you would share?
Oh gosh. Well, I was in high school when I started Purring Pumas. Sorry. I was importing car parts from Brazil. It had a great tagline, Purring Pumas, parts to keep your puma purring.
Oh, dude. First of all, branding is on point. That yes.
14-year-old creative branding was probably better than 30-something-year-old Alan's. I think the biggest thing was, like, I think at that stage, I definitely had a lot of imposter syndrome a lot of times. How do you actually grow this thing? How do you make this thing bigger? And I think I was limited in kind of like my thought process, like what that could have been. And ultimately, I think the biggest thing is, if I had just told myself, Alan, you're not just doing this with pool car parts. You can do this with any car parts. You can build this out. And like, I could have kept going. I wasn't passionate about the idea, is one thing I will say back then. But I was also, I wasn't convinced that I knew how to grow the thing. And ultimately, once you get into running companies, like, you just kind of got to go. And that's the thing. It's just like, there's no reason why that you can't do it. And the only thing that's honestly holding you back from it is your own mental capacity. And I think that's the biggest thing of just, hey, just keep going. Don't think that because you don't know somebody in XYZ or you don't know how to do this, that you can't do it. Guess what? 90% of entrepreneurs don't know how to do what the heck they're doing in their business, but they're really freaking quick learners. And that's really where they succeed. And that's the big thing that I think that we need to realize is, like, we only get better by learning, and the best entrepreneurs are serial learners. And that's it.
That's awesome.
Keep it going.
Yeah, dude. That's awesome, dude. All right, man. Well, lastly, I know we're rounding out here. Anything else that you wanted to plug? Yeah, as we round it down.
Ooh, anything I wanted to plug. Let's see. We are releasing an awesome film called Rickshaw Girl. It's a really cool story about female empowerment, based upon a top film or top book awarded by the New York Public Library. We're releasing it on December 8th on Apple TV and Amazon Prime Video. It's called Rickshaw Girl. It's by amazing Amitabh Reza Chowdhury, the director, and the book is by Mithali Perkins. And we're really excited about it. It releases on December 8th.
Good stuff. Cool. All right, dude. Well, again, congrats on all the success here, early stages at Film Hub. You guys are clearly onto something pretty big. Appreciate you and taking the time, and excited to got to have you back on again here sometime in the future.
Awesome. Justin, well, thank you so much.
All right. We'll talk soon. Cool. Thanks, Alan. All right. That is a wrap. Again, a big shout out to Alan and the team at Film Hub. Awesome to catch up, see what the team's building to make it easier to produce films. So needed in that business. We got a big week coming up at the Assassins Podcast. I got a good friend coming on next week who's been on both sides of the table as a founder and now as an investor. Excited to have him on. Also want to just say thank you to all the listeners. It's that season of giving and thanks. Hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving. Appreciate y'all tuning in. In the meantime, keep hustling. Keep grinding, getting
them dollar signs, hustle, grind. Assassin state of mind, hustle, grind. See them dollar signs, assassin state of mind, assassin state of mind, hustle, grind. See them dollar signs way above the bottom line, assassin state of mind, hustle, grind. See them dollar signs, assassin state of mind, assassin state of mind, hustle. Grind. See them dollar signs way above the bottom line. Assassin state of mind. They say money over everything. Everything engaged in the game. Shopping for a wedding ring. Salaries, startups, crypto, stock exchange. Appreciate every penny. Pocket change. One phone call and your life can change. What's your love language? Can't do business if it ain't reciprocated. Closing deals on a daily, weekly, monthly. Real, recognized, real. Your dudes is acting funny.